Hello, everyone. I'm Nate Truax, and you're listening to the CrocCast Podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the CrocCast Podcast. I'm your host, Nate. And today I'm joined by Joe DiStefano of Meteoric Serpents and the Kluberg Corruption Podcast. Joe, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Joe, you want to get us started off on how you first got into reptiles?
Yeah, sure. The hobby started for me at the ripe age of 10 years old. I had a local pet store by me. It was a full like exotic store. So tropical fish, you know, reptiles, birds, you name it. I used to go a lot in there for fish. I used to keep fish when I was a lot younger. And we walked in and there was this one day I saw this Texas rat snake labeled for $35. And I said to my dad, I'm like, look, there's a $35 snake. And we ended up going home with that snake that day. And that's what started the kind of obsession for me. It evolved a lot more over that. I ended up working for that pet store starting a few years later when I was like 14 or 15. That was my first ever job. And I worked there for years. So that's where a lot of my original knowledge and experience for reptiles came with. So I was keeping that one snake for a while. I know I got like a California king snake for Christmas at some other point. And then, you know, I was all about the breeding. I was seeing, you know, YouTube stuff, Brian Barchek, all of that. I was like, I want to breed snakes. I'm like, that's so cool. We did it at the pet store too. In 2017, I got my second Texas rat snake, which was a visual scaleless Texas rat, and it was a male. The one I had was a female, but this was a hatchling and he wasn't big enough to breed. So my boss at the time let me do like a breeder loan. Essentially, I brought my girl to the shop, we bred it to one of the adult males that was there, then I took her back home, which is, you know, sounds crazy like, yeah. Looking back at it, like usually you don't move the female around, if anything it's the male. But got some babies from that first time pairing back in 2017. So I was, you know, 16, 17 years old at that point, and I was able to breed my first snakes, which was really, really cool. And just going from there, it evolved a lot. And then moving to Florida in 2021 is really when my collection started to expand more and more, and brings me to kind of where I'm at today.
Okay. And what all do you keep at the moment other than Texas rats?
Yeah, so the Texas rats are definitely, I'd call them like my main project, definitely, you know, animals I love. I'm never going to give up on that species. I work with some ball pythons as well. And then other colubrids wise, I'm working with some of the Asian colubrid species. I have some porphyracea. I have both the cocci and the volanti, which are underrated and super cool. I have a pair of rhino rats. I have a pair of neotropical bird eaters, which are an interesting one in the mix of the animals, but I picked up a pair of those at Daytona. They're super, super cool. I also got a pair of like California king snakes. I have one lone corn snake. That's pretty much the gist of it. That's pretty much everything.
Okay. And with your Texas rats, are there any particular morphs you're breeding out?
Yeah, so I work a lot with the scaleless animals, and while I know that's not everyone's cup of tea, scaleless Texas rats are not genetically deficient in any way, so I just want to clear that up before we kind of get into that. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about that. Some people don't actually know they have belly scales or ventral scales, whatever you want to call them, which allows them to be able to move around the same way any old snake can. It's really just, you know, their sides and their top that doesn't have scales. And those belly scales really is what allows them to be healthy, move properly, be able to catch prey, and they still shed like normal, like any other snake. Obviously, like the scaleless parts, like it's kind of just, I don't know how to describe it. You know how you see the scales on the shed skin? It's more like just like
the interstitial space.
Smooth. Yeah, it's just like kind of smooth, but it still comes off as shed skin the same way any old snake can. I take care of mine the same way. I'm also working with, like, I have leucistic in that project, and erythristic. There's a lot of cool genetics. I honestly just think the species is untapped, and there's so much natural variability in both the coloration, the mutations, and just like you breed two Texas rats together and none of those babies are going to look the same. That's just how it is. And really only, and I don't want to say only someone, but like someone who actually understands these animals is able to pick up on that like ASAP. And I had some normals at my table at Colubrid Fest, and I'm not sure if you got to take a look at them very well, but like if you really look at them side by side, you could pick out the differences almost immediately.
Yeah. And I've spent quite a bit of time in Texas. So I've actually found a couple wild Texas rats in my time.
Nice.
So here's one I found when I was interning at one place, and we'd actually had a night event at the zoo. And after it was done, we were all leaving, and I just pull out into the driveway, and right at the entrance of the driveway onto the road was sitting that guy right there. So managed to pull him out.
Yeah, looks like a pretty. I'd call that a pretty standard, you know, colored Texas rat. It's definitely a nicer one because you get some, like, I'll call them dingier, darker ones, but that one has some brighter colors on it. So yeah, definitely a nice example of, you know, what the species is.
Yeah, but found a few others in my time. One of the gator places I worked at, they had a raccoon, outdoor raccoon exhibit, which was fenced in with like chain link fencing.
Okay.
And one morning we come out, and there's a Texas rat snake climbing up through it, just weaving his way through all the linking. And we're like, oh crap, we gotta get him before the raccoon wakes up and sees him, because as soon as he sees him, he's gonna get torn up.
Yeah.
So let's see if I can. And yeah, because that's what he looked like after we got him out.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a nice looking one too.
So
you see on that one, so you see something interesting there. You see almost towards the belly scales how you see almost that green
lightning
scalation. Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think, not to say that like green is a standard base color that's in there, but I've been noticing more and more like these animals have the ability to have this yellowish green pigment in them, in the scales. And I think that's something that I want to continue to work on. And besides just the genetic mutations, I think, you know, like I was saying, just because no two animals look the same, I think there's so many ways to go with the species. And I really want to work on both line breeding as well as morph breeding to create the best examples of the species possible. And I know I have a couple triple het adults that have a lot of yellow and green on them, just like not what your standard Texas rat looks like. The hets seem to play a big influence on the normal individuals as well, even on the scaleless. You get so much variability on the scaleless as well because, you know, it takes what's on a normal and just amplifies it because you're seeing what's underneath, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever thought of doing locality breeding with them?
Only if I was able to pick out individuals where I really, really liked their colors. That's the only way I'd breed for locality. On the contrary, though, I would be more than open to bringing in a locality animal to my collection if it has really nice coloration so that I could get that into my lineage. And even outcross some of the mutations as well, because obviously you don't want to keep inbreeding stuff, which is not my plan. But yeah, I feel like pure Texas rats in the hobby are getting fewer and fewer far between, no matter what people have them labeled as. I have a good eye for picking out and being questionable about some animals.
So sounds like we need to get you out to Texas sometime to go herping for them.
That would be super, super cool. I'd love to find some. I'm just super picky. It's a me thing. I'm super picky about the way the animals look, and I'd want to make sure it's a coloration or an animal that I really want to look at. Like, I don't want to have just any old locality. Yeah, nice. Like, I don't just want to have any old locality Texas rat just because it's a locality. It needs to be an animal that I can work into my existing projects, you know, if that makes sense. Yeah. That's how I look at a lot of things. And yeah, that's me being picky in particular, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, well, we're all picky in our own ways. Yours is more physiological, maybe not physiological, but morphological.
Yes.
Instead of local.
Yes, correct.
But yes, when we found out herping, like last time I was out there, really seriously herping in Texas.
Nice.
And that's back in 2019. Yeah. But you can't really see this picture, but we're pretty sure he got nicked by a car because
I remember his
eye was really red looking.
Oh, wow.
So I think he might have got nicked by a car and there might have been some blood leaking in underneath his scale.
Gotcha.
So do you do any herping at all?
Honestly, I really don't. So,
and you're in Boca Raton.
I am. So I
for
mean,
those
I,
of you, yeah, for these, those of you who don't know, we actually met at Kluberfest a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And me and him were talking with Brian and we brought up the fact that he's at basically next door to the Everglades, never goes herping. So we're kind of a little bit of shade.
Chris Montross has given me shit for it too. But no, so I came from New York City. So in Queens, you can't do a damn thing. And sure, there are animals around. Like, you actually can definitely find garter snakes in random places in the city. And you're mostly looking at like train tracks that are in like Queens where I'm at. And I had train tracks by me, but like, you don't want to go down there. I was a lot younger when I was there, so like my parents would have killed me if I was going down on the train tracks and doing some weird stuff. But it would be super cool. And I have tried going out like occasionally, but because I'm in Boca and it's a very populated area and industrialized, like there's just not much wild space for you to go herping, if that makes sense to people. And it really probably only makes sense if you can physically stand where I live and drive around and see what I'm talking about. Even like I have a public park like right down the road from me, but they close it at night. And sure, I couldn't even sneak in because they lock the gates at the front of the entrance. And if I even just left my car there, a cop could drive by and, you know, I could get ticketed for that. And I'm just not playing those games. The only herp I've found when trying to actually go herping is a Brahminy blind snake. I turned over a rock and I found one. And I didn't even know what it was. I had to look it up after the fact just because I simply didn't know the animal. But I've always thought, I was like, oh, what if I found like a, you know, an Everglades or a yellow or a corn? Like that would be super cool and have like a Palm Beach County animal to myself.
Yeah. Sounds like we need to get you in contact with Phil Wolf. He's up in
I know, he's Lauderdale. Right. Yeah. I know him. He's right by me too. We probably have to like schedule something. We talked about it once, but we just haven't gotten out there. So
yeah. So you have another buddy of mine who also lives down in South Florida, but he's a little bit harder to get in contact with. So
gotcha.
But so what is it about Texas rats in particular, other than them being your first snake, that really drew you into keeping them?
Yeah. It's hard to give another factor really, but like, you know, like I was saying before, it was my first snake. It's what got me into the hobby. And that really drew me in. I also, like we were saying, like just the general variability you get with the offspring. I just think there's so much work to be done with the species, that most people aren't doing or aren't willing to do. And I know even, you know, when I Venn shows and stuff, like not everyone's walking in there looking for a Texas rat snake, but I know I'm still making cool animals. I've still sold cool animals. So Yeah, it's just a species I want to continue working with, continue propagating in the hobby. And, you know, there's a reason my podcast is called Colubrid Corruption. It's really just to try to get and show more people these animals that they didn't know existed, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I like, you know, people give Texas rats a bad rap for having an attitude. I promise I do not get bit by any snake that's older than a year. I really don't. Any of my personal animals, all my adults, I don't get bit. You could call me a liar. It's just facts. Texas rats aren't that bad, and they're super cool animals. They grow a little bit bigger than, you know, like a corn snake. They hatch out a little bit bigger and hardier and stuff like that. And yeah, the morphs are limited for now, but I think in breeding, and I have another buddy that breeds them pretty extensively, I'm sure there's more to be found with the species that we just don't quite know about yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they say everything's bigger in Texas. So
yeah. Yeah.
I was just randomly working with some Amish guys one day, and they were just talking about Texas, like, oh yeah, everything gets bigger down in Texas. And another one without missing beat said, yeah, just don't get your wife there. So, but yeah, my personal experience with wild Texas rats, the one was a little bit defensive, but to be fair, we had to pull them out of a chain link fence before raccoon saw them and decided to tear them up. But all the other times, the full grown adults weren't that bad. I mean,
yeah.
And also, it's a rat snake. A bite, I mean, it's not comfortable to say the least, but it's not that bad.
It's not bad. Especially a baby. I mean, like, you could grow them pretty quick, but like one way or another, it's still a small snake.
Yeah. So you also keep ball pythons as well.
I do.
Breed those. Any particular morphs you're working with?
Yeah. So I've actually recently, so in 2021, when I moved down here and like I could legally keep ball pythons, that's when the craze started. For those who don't know, in New York City, like all pythons and boas are technically illegal. There are people who keep them still, but it is technically illegal. That's why they only have shows in White Plains and in Long Island, because it's outside of the five boroughs. But yeah, so I keep the ball pythons, and I kind of went a little crazy when I got into it. I was, you know, on that like COVID hype, I guess. I don't want to call myself a COVID breeder, because that's how people like would classify people like me when I started getting into the ball pythons. But like, the reptiles have always been my thing for a very long time. I just saw a species, I was like, oh, there's actually cool colors here. And mind you, back in high school, I used to say, screw ball pythons, they're boring, they're pet rocks. But then I really started to open my eyes and start seeing on YouTube and social media and stuff, I'm like, oh, there's a lot more here now than there was back in like 2014, 2015, when I was watching, you know, snake bites and stuff. I'm like, now there's some cool stuff that like I could actually be interested in. So I bought a ton of stuff. Long story short, I've begun the process, and I'm pretty much almost there, taking down the ball python collection solely to the puzzle and hypo puzzle project, which are two recessive mutations. The puzzle is super cool, and I actually wound up hitting a double recessive hypo puzzle this year on a double head pairing, which just on ball python odds seems harder than any like colubrid odds. There's just less eggs, and the chances feel harder. But I was able to hit that, so that was very cool, a nice milestone in my book. But yeah, I'm going to continue that project because there's still kind of work to be done. Not that puzzle is new, it just hasn't been worked extensively like a bunch of other genetics have been. So working more incomplete dominant traits in there, potentially another recessive or two, though I'm going to kind of take it slow. It's easy to get caught up in the train of ball pythons. And to be honest, I don't love that side of the industry for the most part. I have some good friends over there, but like, I think the industry is a little toxic. It's a little fake and all that stuff. So I try to kind of keep my distance and do my own thing and not really get my influence from the masses.
Yeah. Me and Brian at Last Reptile Ramblings were talking about the side of the reptile hobby, well, not really the hobby, but the business side that feels kind of sleazy.
Yeah.
And they're almost always working with some sort of large constrictor, maybe not as often, but maybe a venomous or a crocodilian or monitors or other large lizards that people shouldn't have.
Yeah.
You just see them at expos trying to sell them to anyone, everyone, no matter how underqualified they are for them.
Yeah.
It's not really the case with ball python breeders, I would say, as much as they just, a lot of the times it looks like they're just trying to move as much merch as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, 100%. I mean, there's a lot of ball python breeders who I personally believe, as much as they want to deny it till they're blue in the face, I think there's a ton who are in it just for the money and not really for the animals. And I mean, I guess, sure, I don't really think they belong in the industry, but that's fine. I'm not in ball pythons for the money. I actually like them and I actually like the projects I'm working. So I'm fairly content with where I'm at with them. And it is another good, on a business side of things, it is another good asset to my collection. But that's not why I'm doing it. I am doing it because I like the animals. And you know, like I mentioned, that hypo puzzle I hit is a badass animal. And, like, it's really, really cool. So,
yeah. Yeah, I have a friend of mine who mostly breeds colubrids. But he does also breed the occasional ball pythons every year. And he's upfront about it. He's like, he says right to my face, yeah, main reason I breed them is every show I take one to, I'll be able to sell it pretty much.
Yeah.
So.
And look, that's fine from a business standpoint. And I know there are some colubrid breeders who do the same thing, and that's okay. You want to make an extra few hundred bucks a year, a couple grand a year from bringing some bells and some, you know, blue-eyed leucistics and other relatively genetically simple animals to a show. Absolutely. That's how you get more people into the hobby. Ball pythons are like the gateway drug, honestly. They are the you know, most populated reptile in the industry. So I have to give them that credit where it's due.
Yeah. But if only if it was corn snakes instead, the world would be a perfect place.
Inflation wouldn't exist. That's a lot of corn snakes. I mean, there's a lot of ball pythons out there. If you look at the morph market numbers, it's almost like mind boggling to think there's that many.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and then how small of a percentage the corn snake number is in comparison. And even if you combine corn snakes and hognoses, which is
the two-thirds,
two-thirds of the colubrid market, it's crazy. I don't even think them combined is like, I don't know, what is it, an eighth of the amount of ball pythons that are out there, which is crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy when I go on Morph Market, I just go on the auction tab.
Yeah.
Just see if there's a bargain out there. It's like 90% ball pythons, every other single species of reptile on there, 10% tops.
Yeah, you're going to see ball pythons, crested geckos, leopard geckos, probably some hognoses. But yeah.
I did randomly pick up a garter snake on there a few months back. So.
Okay, nice. There's low key some decent stuff. I don't look on the auctions tab as much for like all the species. If anything, I'll skim through the ball pythons just to kind of see what people are putting up.
Yeah.
On the auctions.
Yeah. For me, the auctions are kind of, you know how at Walmart, all the DVDs that no one's buying are put in like the $5 giant bin. That's kind of how I use the auction tab on North Park is like, whatever interesting thing, can I get a bargain on it? So.
And sometimes you can. Sometimes things just get unseen and they'll go for, you know, a few bucks. I had a ball python on auction there somewhat recently. And one of the people that were bidding on it, like, knows me from social media, and he messaged me after the fact and was like, dude, I was bidding on this, but then I got stuck at a movie or something, so I forgot about it. So it only went for way less, and it didn't get to that like bidding war that you hope for at the end. I was like, geez, come on. But
yeah, you
know, shit happens.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened with that garter snake I got off there. I just saw and just put a random bid on it. And I saw it was up for like another 4 hours. So like the next 4 hours, I checked my phone. It's like, I wasn't really that interested in getting it. Please, someone else put a bid on it, but no, it wasn't a ball python, so no more bids.
Yeah.
But moving away from what you keep to what you do on the internet, you want to talk about Colubrid Corruption Podcast and how you first got started doing that?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, when it comes to the podcasting thing, so I had been a part of a few circles, like doing ball python related stuff, some of like the live podcasts there, and obviously I was listening to Colubrid and Colubroid Radio with Zach and Clint, but like I saw with this whole live podcasting thing, there was a hole where Colubrids weren't talked about, and you know the NPR network. And I love the guys to death, and I've told them this, so I'm just trying to again phrase it in a way that doesn't sound like offensive or bad, but like Zach and Clint, they're very smart, advanced individuals, and I think sometimes the topics covered don't necessarily lend well to maybe the newer keeper or someone who doesn't really know much about colubrids that maybe wants to learn and get into them. That's where I thought I could like fill the void. And I was like, I think I could talk well. I think I could do this. Like, I understand how to do this podcasting thing. Let me do this. I talked to a few people about it before I got it started. And I was like, what do you think if I did this? And I got good feedback about it. They were like, hey, I think that's a great idea. So there I went and I started that show. And you know, I mean, the feedback on it has been fantastic. Big thank you to anyone who listens to it. It's on YouTube and like the audio platforms as well. But it's been a blast. And to be able to talk to all of these other keepers and breeders who keep all these cool species, it's been really interesting. And it's really fun to get their perspectives on things, especially like when you're not going to get this stuff over social media. It's not like this person is going to have this whole conversation with you over a text message or over like posting stuff on social media. It's like you really get to dive into topics and learn and like, you know, and this might sound weird, but like I'll re-listen to episodes all the time just because I want to hear again what like they said, even though I was there in the moment and it would be great if I took it in. But like I have that ability now where I could be like, what did he say again about that? And yeah, so that's fun. I think the live shows are cool. I try to get live people in the chat. Sometimes it doesn't happen. I know a lot of people are busy, but yeah, I mean, overall, it's just been a really fun experience, and I'm definitely going to keep it going because I know there's a lot of people who like it and listen.
Yeah. That, well, part of what you said there was actually my inspiration for starting CrocCast is you can't have long-form conversations with people over text or messenger or what have you.
Yeah.
So I basically, back in 2021, yeah, I was just looking at my Facebook friends list, and it's like, oh, there's a lot of people who I just added because mutual friends, and I see on the profile they did something interesting with reptiles.
Right.
And I don't know them. May as well do this podcast thing just as an excuse to have these conversations to get to know them, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Well,
also, I did more as like a variety channel with a more of an emphasis on crocodilians because there wasn't really a crocodilian podcast as far as I can see. I don't know if maybe someone has started one. I don't know, but
not to my knowledge. I don't know of one.
So yeah, I got more of a variety show, so yours is very good in the fact that it is a very digestible content for someone getting into this.
I try my best, and I have like ball python friends that are like, dude, you need to like give common names, stop with the scientific. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I try to do it when I can. Like, I know the scientific, and a lot of these species, especially like the Asian species, get referred to by scientific only just because the common names can be jumbled up. You know, like I said before, I said cocci and volanti, and to any listener who doesn't know, that's the Thai bamboo rat snake and the Chinese bamboo rat snake, which even if you look those up, you may be looking at the wrong subspecies. But if you look up Oreocryptophis porphyracea cocci and then OP Valenti, you're going to find what I keep.
Yeah. And it used to be a pretty solid way until the cursed phylogenist got involved and decided, I want to have my name on a dozen papers. I'm going to make a complete mess of everything.
Yeah. With North American stuff, you know, there ain't no way in hell I'm calling my Texas rats Western rats. It's just not happening. As much as they want to say that's what it is now, it's just not. And yeah, it's Linheimeri forever. I write obsoletus, like just obsoletus on the box. So, you know, U.S. wildlife officials can move on with their day. But, you know, I'll still call them Linheimeri because I know that's what they are. They're not black rats or anything else.
Yeah, and I know more than one person who still calls him a laugh face. So,
okay, yeah.
But, so is there anything, any species you haven't worked with that you want to work with in the future?
Oh boy, that list is long. You know, I'd love to work with more stuff. But I think going forward, and especially after Colubrid Fest and talking to some people, like, I think I'm really going to be picky on the stuff. You know, like I was saying before, I'm going to be picky about the stuff I bring in unless it's something that I think is a must have. I'd like to get into more of the, if I had to choose, I'd like to get more of the Gonyosoma species, which are your, like, rhino rats. Now, at least, your rhino rats, your green bush rats, red-tailed green rats, that's Oxycephalum, Jansenii, which, you know, hopefully more people are able to breed those in captivity. And then there's Margaret's Atom, which who knows if we'll ever really be able to get those in captivity. But there's more and more people breeding Oxycephalum. And there was a pair posted like the other day that went for a stupidly cheap price. And in fact, my episode I'm having tomorrow is someone who breeds them. So that's a species I'd definitely be interested in having. And I know they're no joke. It's like, you're going to get bit. They're like, they're flighty, but they're really cool. So I don't know.
Honestly, that just sounds like almost like the bulk of Asian colubrid species, but
yeah. Yeah. But I really enjoy rhinos. Rhinos are so cool. I honestly, before I add more of that, I probably should add more rhinos because I really, really like rhino rat snakes. They're just really fun. They're really easy to take care of, despite what people might say. And they're just super cool looking. I have my hatchling right now going through like it's OCC pretty much. It's like it's almost like every day. It's funny. It's not between sheds. Like it had its most recent shed and it was still gray. And I was like, well, I was hoping for some green. And then like slowly, like week by week, I'm noticing and I'm like, it's getting more and more green, but it hasn't had a shed. But it's coming. And that transition is moving along, which is really cool.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if they're those snakes display any sort of limited color change ability. Because I've seen it, I haven't seen it personally, but I've seen multiple reports of herps other than chameleons and anoles actually having some limited color change ability. Maybe not so much as color as shade, as shading changing. Like
interesting.
Like crocodilians could actually have a very limited color change ability.
Okay.
So they actually did a comparison of took individuals, put them in a dark tank. After a few hours, took them out, took a picture. Then put them in a light tank for several hours, took it back out, took a picture, and they'll slowly shift their coloration to be either darker or lighter to match the background a little bit better. So
interesting.
Be interesting to see if the sort of like background coloration of the tank or whatever you have them in might influence that.
Now I do know with the rhino rats, and this is from the mouth of Rob Stone, so you can quote him, but he does believe that the rhino females will go through a form of hormonal blue the way that chondros will, or green tree pythons. Some females he has seen, and in his breeding, like you know, he sees animals transition to like that blue coloration over time, which is not what you're saying, but I'm just giving an example of some color, some other color change that could happen over time.
Yeah.
But yeah, he said he has seen that in his captive bred individuals, which is something I'm, you know, curious in too. I'd like to breed them eventually.
Yeah. So if you ever go on the Herpetoculture Podcast, I'm guessing you're going to be taking a side in the ongoing feud between Smitty and Jake.
Oh, it's they already know. Yeah. Smitty and Jake, they know. They know my answer.
Poor Jake, I'm, all alone by team, himself.
He's really not, because there's a lot of Baron's lovers.
Yeah.
But I'm Team Rhino forever. They'll never change me.
Yeah. Me, who's never kept either species, just choosing whichever one will piss off the one talking to me at the moment.
I don't know if you've heard the story, but apparently Rhino wins in a literal death match, because there was one time where someone cohabbed them and the Rhino won that battle.
Dang.
Very literally.
Was this like an accidental cohab? Like, oh, this thing has
kind of
mistaken, yeah, identity.
I don't remember. But yeah, either way, a Rhino and a Baron's were in the same enclosure, and the Rhino was the only one after some time.
It's actually kind of impressive considering how Baron's had that pretty nasty rear fangs venom. So
yeah. And along with that, I mean, Baron's like get bigger, like, but I don't know the size they were at. I think they were both on the smaller end. But
yeah. So, have you ever thought of keeping any sort of South American dipsadids?
No, I'm not.
Not even a falsie?
No, honestly, I have. While I think if I were to keep like any of that stuff, and it's not those, if I were to keep anything rear fanged, it would probably be Boega.
Okay.
Boega are beautiful.
Yeah.
It also, you know, in that Southeast Asia region, like some of the animals I currently keep, I think they're super cool. But no, I genuinely have no desire to mess with rear fangs and put myself in any, and I hate saying this, because like I just think there's a responsibility factor, and I don't want to get bit and have something happen. Like I just genuinely don't. And I don't mean to sound like I'm fear-mongering talking about those species. It's just, it's not for me. It's not something I want to risk, like, ever. And I respect anyone who keeps them properly and does things the right way, ethically and all that, and especially with like selling and stuff. But I have no tolerance for unethical behavior with any of those species, regardless.
It's funny you should bring that up, considering that the week of like 5 days before Kluberfest, my falsie did manage to get a hold of my finger. So,
oh really?
Yeah, he's full 5, maybe near 6 foot now. Fortunately, only, and it was a feeding bite too. He had.
Did he like actually get you, or did he kind of just nip you?
It was more like, well, basically, he flew out of his cage, and the cage I have him on is like 4 feet above the ground. So he completely flew out, landed on the ground, and he started coming right at me, mouth agape, feeding. And I was wearing shorts, so I was kind of freaking out. He latched onto my ankles.
Yeah.
And he had gotten in between me and where I had my hook set, so I only had the feeding tongs. So I was trying to use the feeding tongs to try to get him turned around or something. And these are like 2 foot long tongs, too. I wasn't using like little tongs, you know, easy strike business tongs. He leapt all the way past the tongs and managed to get the front of his mouth and my finger. Oh, and I think just, but fortunately, I think just me, that he only got me the front of the mouth, and I, you know, kind of flew my hand up.
Okay.
I was like, ah, he's like, just stopped, turned around, went to explore mode. So I got lucky there.
Yeah.
But, what was your question? First part.
We were talking, you asked if I would keep any South American dipsadids.
That's when I was telling my story, you had a question that.
Oh, I said, did it actually get you, or did it kind of just nip you?
He only got me with the front of the mouth, fortunately,
but
that's for, Colubrid or Colubroid. That was the far away the most blood that's ever been drawn on me by one of those.
Okay.
And that was just with his front teeth, so.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen plenty of people freehandle their falsies. I've never freehandled him.
Okay.
One, he's not used to being handled too much, so he's probably. So I haven't even tried because I, well, like you said, I don't want to get bit either.
Yeah, yeah.
I like my fingers where they are.
No, and I don't have a problem with, like, I hope you didn't mistranslate. I don't have a problem freehandling, like, rear fanged stuff. As long as the animal's, like, conditioned and whatever. And, like, there are some people who do it and that animal is no problem whatsoever. And that's totally fine. But, it's really just not something I have a desire to mess with.
Yeah, no, with him in particular, it's more him personally, because, like I said, he's just not used to me putting my hands on him.
Yeah.
So I have to use a hook to move him around.
Gotcha. So
he also gets really cranky whenever I try and open up the cage on him. So.
Yeah.
So outside of colubrids, is there any type of pythons you're interested in keeping? Or boas?
Not really boas. Boas just aren't my jam for whatever reason. I appreciate them. I think there are some cool species out there, but no. I think Papuan carpets are cool.
That's what I keep, though.
There was a period like before Daytona where I was like almost considering getting one, and those were some impulsive thoughts, and then I, you know, corrected myself.
Wait, you said Papuan pythons or Papuan carpets?
Papuan carpets.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Not an Apodora. No, thank you.
Yeah, that's a scary thought right there.
Yeah, no. And I gotta say, big shout out to Stephen Cush. I think freaking scrub pythons are super cool. I don't think I'd ever keep one just because of the size they get, but I really do think they're cool, and I definitely appreciate them as a very cool species. Oh, I'm sorry. Chondra, I'll definitely get a green tree eventually. Green tree python.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were talking about poplin carpets, so.
No.
I have poplin carpets, so.
Okay. Yeah, no. I think scrub pythons are cool, but I will definitely, when I'm in my own place and I can work out, like, those nice specialty enclosures and whatnot, like, I definitely will want to get a chondro of some sort, whether it's a locality or a designer. I'm not 100% sure. I like Manaquaris, though. I think they're cool looking.
Yeah. So, regards to pythons, boas, one that I got, probably close to a year ago now. That's my falsie for verification. Nice. So that's like a 4 foot long pole, just to give you an idea how big he is. So
yeah, it's a pretty big one.
Yeah. But boas, yeah. I recently got a few probably near a year ago now. Solomon Island tree boas. I have just one male. I'm looking to get a female of those guys, because those guys are kind of interesting in my opinion. Both in their appearance and kind of their biogeographic story, in that they're a random boa that's just in the Southwest Pacific, thousands of miles away from the nearest neighboring boa species outside of, well, other than like ground boas and viper boas, but those are also Candoia as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that Southwest Pacific has both boas and iguanas, when the nearest ones are pretty much the other side of the Pacific Ocean. So.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I'm not sure. You got anything else that you want to know?
I'm kind of blanking at the moment, not going to lie.
No, I mean, check out Texas rat snakes. They're cool. Check out Asian rat snakes. They're also cool for anyone listening. But yeah.
All right. And where can people find you on your podcast?
Yeah, you can look up meteoric serpents pretty much anywhere on social media platforms. You could also just Google search colubrid corruption very simply, and you could find my podcast either YouTube or like Apple, Spotify, all that stuff. I'm on there. Send me a message if you have any questions. Instagram is the best place to really reach me. That I'm on there all the time. But yeah.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.